This is Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Racial Justice Editor at Yes Media. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Unionized auto workers appear to have reached a tentative agreement with the big three automakers based in Detroit. After weeks of creative strategizing around strikes and setting high standards for their contract negotiations, manufacturers have agreed to many, but not all, of United Auto Workers' demands, including hefty wage increases, cost of living adjustments, and an elimination of a two-tiered hiring system. Part of the union's victory includes an agreement secured with GM in early October to bring electric car battery facilities under UAW's national contract. My guest sees this as critical to what climate justice organizers have for years been calling a just transition away from fossil fuels. And that guest is Les Leopold, Executive Director of the Labor Institute, author of the forthcoming book, Wall Street's War on Workers, How Mass Layoffs and Greed Are Destroying the Working Class and What to Do About It. Welcome to the program, Les.
Thank you very much for having me.
So before we get to the just transition part of it, how do you view just a broad assessment, if you will? What is your broad assessment of UAW's victory? I mean, it's still a tentative agreement. I understand that the members still have to sign off on what was achieved, but they set the bar really high, and the militancy compared to recent labor disputes was off the charts.
It's fantastic. It's ushering in an entirely new era of collective bargaining, and more than collective bargaining, setting a tone for the labor movement that has not been there for a long, long time. This is framing the struggle not just as a struggle for themselves, but as the opening of a class war, is what they're saying, and that this is just the start. That's very inspiring. And the proof, though, in the pudding will be, can they now attract the non-union transplant factories as well as Tesla? Can those workers now be organized? Will they be inspired by the incredibly good contracts that the UAW has won? Will they now rush towards the UAW? You know, there's an apocryphal story from the 1940s where one organizer for the CIO said, "Today, I organized 12 local unions." Now, of course, he didn't go out and organize 12 local unions, but the spirit of organizing was so widespread that 12 different groups of workers from different facilities came into his office that day, and he issued them charters. We'd like to get back to that period where the workers at Tesla and the workers at Toyota and BMW, whatever the other transplants, go rushing towards the UAW. The difference between now and then, though, and this is a severe difference, is the labor law has been tilted dramatically against working people. So this is going to be a very, very big test going forward in the future. That's my big picture look at this.
Let's look at the intersection between worker, the labor movement and the climate justice movement. Traditionally, you know, when it comes to things like miners and car auto workers, the issue of workers' rights has been pitted against our continued reliance on fossil fuels. And, you know, sometimes organized labor has been on the wrong side of the movement away from fossil fuels. How has the UAW's approach to this been different?
Well, this is a first step. They recognized that they had to do something about the transition, or it was going to be a very unjust transition, not a just transition. Their circumstances, however, are unique. There's two parts of just transition that they were working on. The first was a transition from the old jobs to the new jobs. So internal combustion engine jobs to electrical manufacturing jobs and battery plants and such. Those were non-union, those were lower paid. And this new set of contracts with the big three, is going to bring those facilities into the auto worker contracts, dramatically increasing the wages there. And the workers in the old jobs will have transfer rights to the new jobs. So that's that part of the transition. They've done a good job, really good job. The second part of transition is what happens if there aren't enough jobs, new jobs, for the people who have the old jobs. So the people who have fossil fuel related jobs, what happens to them if there are not enough non-fossil fuel related jobs? Well, they had a proposal, which was that the company would have to pay those workers to do community service where those facilities were shut down. So if they shut down a plant in Detroit that made engine parts or something, then those workers would be paid to go do community service. That's the heavy lift of just transition. They didn't win that. But what they did win, which is going to work for them, is the right to strike over a plant closing. Now, think about how that would work. So a company, GM, decides, okay, we don't need that particular internal combustion engine plant anymore. We're going to shut it down. And there's only enough transition jobs someplace else for 10% of the workers. What happens to the other 90%? Well, the UAW can now say, guess what? We have the right to strike during the contract. So now GM has to say, how much is this strike going to cost me versus how much will it cost me if I put something else in that plant? What else do we need? Maybe we could put different parts of the car or a truck into there, or something new that we're experimenting with. That's very, very important to keep that plant open, because it's not just for those workers, it's for the community that depends on all those people and the income from that plant. That's going to be very interesting to see if they can prevent any job loss due to transition. Unfortunately, this is not a model for the rest of the country. And this, I hope the climate justice people understand, because General Motors, in fact, has hundreds of facilities and are juggling hundreds of different plans for production. So they conceivably can put something new into an old factory. They can do it. Large, complex corporations can do it. But what about the oil industry? We're working with oil workers in California, and there's a standard there where they're going to be only electric cars after 2035. What's going to happen to the people in those refineries? Where do they transition to? The oil, it's not like the oil industry has got another set of that they're making, you know, solar panels or something else that could then pay the same amount that they're getting now if they were unionized, et cetera. They don't have that opportunity. And so the tension that you refer to, I believe, is going to be as high as ever, if not higher, because the shutdowns actually now are occurring. People are now losing their jobs, and they're going to be upset because in this country, we have no transition program. It's left to the market. And right. The market means you suffer.
Right. Or we remain stuck in fossil fuel, based economy for longer, which, of course, we're currently seeing every day the evidence of climate change, and the transition should have happened. The full transition should have happened years ago. Can this also, let's talk about what you were referring to in the early part of the interview in terms of how it can spread, particularly to Tesla workers, right? We're seeing this one company, you know, headed by somebody who is vehemently anti-union. That's also an iconic company, and Tesla has been making brisk sales of EVs. What is the organizing potential, whether through the UAW or another union? Is there potential, do you foresee that the current moment we're in with labor's resurgence can actually spread?
This is the best time that I've seen in my lifetime for this, because when you have a sort of rank and file Democratic takeover of a union, UAW, and they go out and succeed. They go on strike and succeed. Now you look very muscular and very successful to the young workers at Tesla. Those workers got to be thinking, I'm getting $18 an hour. They're going to be getting $40 an hour in 4 years. What am I doing here? Why don't we have a union? So I think the energy from the Tesla workers connecting with the energy from the UAW workers is exactly what you need for success in a mass organizing drive. But again, the problem are all the legal hurdles that the anti-labor lawyers that are hired by the, basketful by Tesla are going to be throwing in the way. Nevertheless, it's possible that things could get so chaotic that even Musk would have to agree to a contract. And what I mean by chaotic is if enough workers get the bug, if they see these UAW people prospering and coming to them and helping them organize, and they get rambunctious, well, they could cause all kinds of production problems, not necessarily by doing anything illegal. They just decide not to go to work for a week. What the heck? Let's see what happens. I mean, it could get very complicated in a good way, but it's that energy. There's a school of thought that says, the old unions just don't know how to organize anymore. They're not community organizers. They don't know really how to win. And some of that is true, but I don't think that's the make or break issue. The make or break issue is this zeitgeist, the spirit, the energy. And the UAW has just unlocked a whole nother level of energy that was already there with other unions being successful. And that energy has got to have to infect the Tesla workers. They're going to have to run towards the UAW, not just wait to, somebody to do the right technique. There's a chance here. Would I say the chance is more than 50-50? No, not yet. But the chance is better now than any time in the last 30 years, I'd say, for them to succeed. If you could break through Tesla, I think that would be like the dominoes falling throughout the auto industry and other industries. That could lead to an upsurge. Look, we got to keep in mind, only 6% of the private sector is organized. That's down from 35% in 1955. So we got a long way to go to build up union power again. But there are potential tipping points. This could be one. I sure am hoping it is.
There's also the issue of how we approach organizing to begin with that I'd love to get your take on, which is that you set the bar really, really high and you're going to get something better than if you had gone for the realistic option, right? I mean, headlines are going to say, well, the UAW didn't have all of its demands met, but it got way more demands met than I think the auto workers were expecting to meet before it put those demands out, right? So that militancy that you aim for the sky rather than aiming for what you think you can get, that seems a good lesson for organizing in general.
Yeah, and I think we have to step back one, make the frame just a little bit wider here. What sets the UAW apart on this one is not just that they, asked for the moon, but they framed it in terms of runaway inequality. They were saying, look, the owners of this company, the people that are getting the money from the stock buybacks that have been looting the treasury there, they've seen a huge splash and increase in profits and in their own compensation. And, his T-shirt, eat the rich. He's talking in Bernie Sanders-like terms about the billionaire class, and he's framing the demands in terms of what's been happening to society in the last 40 years under neoliberalism. We've right. gotten screwed. They've run away with the money. That's the frame that gives it the militancy. I think all the negotiators really go in there with large demands, but they don't frame it in a way that makes it seem really like the just war.
Sean Fain, the head of UAW, walks around wearing an Eat the Rich t-shirt. I mean, that's
Isn't
pretty
that
amazing. Yeah.
So that framing, that radical framing, see, that's something that labor was uncomfortable with because they thought they were in more of a partnership with capital, 20, 30 years ago. And then they learned that there was a one-sided class war going on and they were on the wrong side. So the UAW is changing that framing game, which is very important.
Well, Les Leopold, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Where can people find out more about the work that you do?
Well, they can follow me at lesleopold@substack.com. I try to write something every week or every couple of weeks. And I've got a new book coming out called Wall Street's War on Workers. And please pre-order it. Apparently, that's very important. So if you can pre-order the book, I think you'll like it very much. If you like this show, you're going to like the book a lot, I promise you.
I want to wish you the best of luck, Les. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest has been Les Leopold, Executive Director of the Labor Institute. His forthcoming book is called Wall Street's War on Workers: How Mass Layoffs and Greed Are Destroying the Working Class and What to Do About It. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar, Racial Justice Editor at Yes Media and host of Yes Presents Rising Up with Sonali. You can find this program at yesmagazine.org, watch it on Free Speech TV, and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Our audio podcast is on iTunes and Spotify.